This clause is just one example. It's the worst example, but it's just one example of the flavour of this government, this parliament, and the climate that we're living in.
Are they arresting people?
Although my sexuality is actually very private to me, I also realised, because I had a certain kind of public awareness, is that I had a kind of a responsibility to not shy away from it.
But I wish I could find a handsome boatman.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Hate protections and marriage rights fuel fiery Canadian debates, the rise and demise of Britain's no-promo homo section 28, and an Irish pop star sings out. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 20th, 2003. The Canadian Parliament opened this week with fiery debates on gay and lesbian issues. In an important victory for gays and lesbians, the House of Commons approved a bill to add sexual orientation as a category protected under the National Hate Propaganda Law. The incitement of hatred law currently covers color, ethnicity, race, and religion, and can be sentenced with up to 5 years imprisonment. The vote was a rare success for a private member's bill from a minor party MP, openly gay New Democrat from British Columbia, Sven Robinson, and it came with an unexpectedly strong 12% margin. Despite a clause specifically exempting religious texts and speech based on them, some religious groups insist the measure could make it illegal to preach sections of the Bible and Quran that condemn homosexuality. Those groups ran full-page newspaper ads against the bill, and one is considering a legal challenge should the measure go on to Senate approval and enactment. Robinson, who was Canada's first openly gay MP and who's been seeking this legal change for more than 20 years, called the opposition fear-mongering. He added, "How can anyone seriously suggest that quoting from the Bible could in fact lead to a criminal prosecution for willfully inciting hatred and violence against gays and lesbians?" He said that argument is a mask for homophobia for people who don't want to be honest about the real reason why they don't want to include sexual orientation in the law.
But equal marriage rights were the first to take center stage in the Canadian Parliament. In the wake of recent provincial appeals court rulings that denying legal marriage to same-gender couples violates the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the Liberal Party government drafted a bill to amend the federal definition of marriage accordingly. The government had planned to bring that bill before the Parliament only after a review by the Canadian Supreme Court. But the High Court refused to fast-track it, and it won't respond before April. National elections are anticipated for early 2004 as well. The main opposition party, the Canadian Alliance, vehemently disapproves of marriage equality and didn't wait to make its views known. The Alliance introduced a non-binding resolution stating that, in the opinion of this House, it is necessary, in light of public debate around recent court decisions, to reaffirm that marriage is and should remain the union of one man and one woman to the exclusion of all others, and that Parliament take all necessary steps within the jurisdiction of the Parliament of Canada to preserve this definition of marriage in Canada. Just 4 years ago, a similar message passed the House by a nearly 4-to-1 margin, with supporters including Prime Minister Jean Chrétien and other leading liberals. But this time it sparked a passionate 6-hour debate as the government defended equality.
Alliance Party leader Stephen Harper announced the motion, saying,
"It is an attack, Mr. Speaker, on the traditional beliefs of every single culture and faith that has come to this country."
Justice Minister Martin Cauchon, who's been traveling the country trying to drum up public support for marriage equality, fired back,
"We do believe in religious freedom and at the same time equality, right, Mr. Speaker? And this is exactly what we are fighting for today as a society."
But Harper also denounced the Liberals' casting of marriage equality as a civil rights issue, saying that to equate the traditional definition of marriage with segregation and apartheid is vile and disgusting. openly lesbian New Democratic Party member of parliament from British Columbia, Libby Davies, told Harper, "Nobody is forcing the leader of the Canadian Alliance to marry a man if he doesn't want to. I think this motion displays a very homophobic attitude." NDP MP Sven Robinson actually called for a show of hands from any MPs who seriously believe that gay and lesbian marriages would threaten their own. No hands went up.
Yet it was clear that the outcome would be close, thanks to division in the large Liberal caucus. Late in the debate, the Alliance sought to gain a few more votes with an attempt to remove the "all necessary steps" clause. That language was understood to include Parliament using the so-called "notwithstanding" clause to override the legal system on equality issues, something it has never done in the more than 20 years since the Charter's adoption. The attempted amendment received a tie vote, the first deadlock in 40 years to require a decisive vote by the Speaker of the House, who turned it down. The official announcement of the final tally on the Alliance motion:
yeas pour 132, 132, nays contre 137.
By a scant 5 votes, the motion failed. Although the session was well attended, about 10% of MPs did not vote. All 63 Alliance MPs supported their party's resolution, joined by more than one-third of the 150 Liberals, despite their government's heavy lobbying.
Of course, the Canadian provinces of Ontario and British Columbia are already licensing gay and lesbian marriages. One couple to wed in Toronto this week were gay Hong Kong civil rights activists Roddy Shaw Kwakwa and Nelson Eng Chin Pang, who hope to use it for tax advantages back home. The relevant Hong Kong tax statute says it includes any marriage, whether or not so recognized by the law of Hong Kong, entered into outside Hong Kong according to the law of the place where it was entered into and between persons having the capacity to do so.
But same-gender marriages don't always cross borders, as the very first gay couple to marry in Toronto discovered this week. Heading for a human rights conference, Kevin Bourassa and Joe Varnell were stopped at the airport by U.S. Customs because they identified themselves as a family and used a joint declaration form. They could have filled out 2 separate forms as single individuals and proceeded, but refused to divorce themselves for that purpose. Actually, they'd entered the U.S. with a joint declaration on 3 previous occasions, but a spokesperson for the U.S. Embassy in Ottawa defended the customs agents stopping them as upholding the state's so-called Defense of Marriage Act. The men's attorney has contacted Canada's foreign affairs minister, who's promised to discuss the matter with the U.S. ambassador.
But California's registered domestic partners continue to gain legal status. This week, embattled Democratic Governor Gray Davis signed into law a bill that expands their legal recognition to a level second only to Vermont's civil unions. Davis declared, "I think we are at our best when we extend rights to every Californian, no matter who they are or who they love." When the new law goes into effect in January 2005, registered partners will have all the state-level rights, protections, benefits, obligations, and duties of legally married spouses in the areas of property, children, survivor status, and dissolution. It will not provide for joint tax returns and some other issues because of possible conflicts with federal law. The new law was authored by openly lesbian Democratic Assembly member for Los Angeles, Jackie Goldberg, and passed the legislature by narrow margins. Last week, Governor Davis signed into law a bill regarding children in foster care, which explicitly protects them from discrimination and harassment based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
Australia's federal Senate this week, for the first time, passed a bill towards equal treatment of gay and lesbian couples in pension benefits. For the first time, it was the Australian Labor Party that introduced the measure, the same ALP that has previously failed to support 11 similar pension reform bills introduced by the Australian Democratic Party. Openly gay Green Party senator from Tasmania, Bob Brown, called the vote monumental, even though the bill is widely expected to fail once it reaches the coalition-dominated lower house. As passed by the Senate, the bill referred to the private sector, although moves were underway to try to extend it to the public sector and the military.
Britain's armed forces will be extending marital pension benefits and other compensation to partners of unmarried service members who register them, the Ministry of Defense announced this week. To register an unmarried partner, regardless of gender, the service member will have to present evidence of what the ministry called a substantial relationship and a long-term commitment. The new plan, which responds to a series of legal decisions, will go into effect in April 2005.
And also in Britain, the last nail was driven into the coffin of the infamous anti-gay law, Section 28, this week, as this year's edition of the Local Government Act received royal assent. Section 28 prohibited local governments from using resources to promote homosexuality and from teaching that same-gender relationships are what it called a pretend family. Although there never was a prosecution under Section 28, it created fear and confusion among local authorities, as well as outrage among gays and lesbians and their allies. Its repeal has been a top target of gay and lesbian civil rights activists ever since its introduction under the Thatcher administration some 15 years ago. But the Conservative Party, led by the late Baroness Janet Young, staunchly and successfully defended it until this year. Repeal in Britain is effective November 18th. Scotland had already repealed its version despite a divisive million-pound religious right campaign in its support.
And finally, Canada's federal legislature, among others, may be struggling over the definition of marriage, but the Canadian Oxford Dictionary is not. Editor-in-Chief Catherine Barber told CanWest News Service that the new edition coming out next year will have an inclusive definition, the legal or religious union of two people. Barber made the change following the landmark ruling by the Ontario Court of Appeals in June. Ken West went on to crack Skeet's Etymological Dictionary of the English Language and discovered that the Latin root mari means male, so the English word marry properly means to provide with a husband. Since the Latin word for wife, marita, means literally joined to a male, one can only conclude that while it properly applies to gay male couples, on this basis, lesbian couples would be excluded.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 20th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Dean Elzinga.
In Ireland, he's hotter than Coldplay, Christina Aguilera, and Justin Timberlake, and being out hasn't cooled him off one bit. Find out how Brian Kennedy uses his popularity to promote positive images for queer youth later in the program. Nothing galvanized the British lesbian and gay rights movement like the 1988 passage of Section 28. Protests against the law prohibiting local governments from using any resources to promote homosexuality quickly spread across Europe, and its repeal has been at the top of the activist agenda ever since. That 15-year Battle of Britain came to an end this week when a reformed Local Government Act that included repeal of Section 28 received royal assent. As the community looks forward to Section 28's official demise in mid-November, This Way Out recalls reports about a London rally opposing the law that aired on our debut program in April 1988 and a demonstration in Amsterdam shortly thereafter.
The practical effects of this law will be the closure of gay centres funded by councils, the ending of lesbian and gay equality units, and possibly the removal of licences for gay pubs and clubs. Positive images of homosexuality in schools will be outlawed, as will the promotion of gay or lesbian lifestyles as pretend family relationships. Whilst help for AIDS organisations is specifically excluded from the bill, there is little doubt in the minds of lesbians and gays that these swinging new measures are part of a growing homophobic backlash following in the wake of the AIDS crisis. Sections of the British press have helped to fuel anti-gay feeling and activity by giving prominence to outbursts from well-known people who seek to blame the legalisation in the 1960s of homosexual acts for the AIDS epidemic. The response from lesbians and gays has been swift and vociferous. A march through the streets of London on January the 9th drew 12,000 people after only 3 weeks' notice. On its way, the march stopped outside Prime Minister Thatcher's residence in Downing Street, where the marchers made their feelings on this new legislation very clear. The march continued past Parliament to a rally addressed by speakers who included out gay Member of Parliament Chris Smith.
I'm afraid that we're facing very, very difficult, nasty, prejudiced, bigoted times in this country at the moment. And this clause is just one example. It's the worst example, but it's just one example of the flavour of this government, this parliament, and the climate that we're living in.
Also there, bringing a message of solidarity from gay and lesbian brothers and sisters in North America, was one of the organisers of the 1987 March on Washington, Robin Tyler. Robin was speaking just as police moved in to arrest people at the rally, sometimes for nothing more than just kissing.
Are they arresting people? Yeah, well, to arrest all the gays and lesbians in England, guys, you're going to have to arrest millions and millions and millions of people. Yeah. Yeah. Including members of Parliament, including members of the Royal Family. We are everywhere. You cannot take us out.
Further action is planned in cities around the country, which will remind all those who'd have us back in the closet that we're out, and we're staying out.
And now we're walking into the hall of the museum, the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam, for the end of the demonstration.
We're here to show that lesbians the world over, and we have many lesbian members all over the world, are protesting against the British law which has just been passed, which is a law which makes it possible to inform and organise as lesbian women and gay men. And it is basically a very, very dangerous law, and we're wanting to make very clear to everyone that these kind of measures must be stopped.
Under the marble columns, there are now 8,000 gay men and lesbians screaming.
So we gotta fight back in large numbers, a fight back. I can't make it alone. Fight back in large numbers. Together we can make a safe home. Fight back.
You've been listening to some of This Way Out's 1988 coverage of Opposition to Britain's No Promo Homo Section 28 by Tim Richardson in London and Jay McLaren in Amsterdam. The repeal of Section 28 goes into effect on November 18th.
This is Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
And then produced my rapier. I said, stand and deliver, or the devil he may take you. But shereen doma do doma da, whack for my daddy-o, whack for my daddy-o. And there's whiskey in the jar.
When former Boyzone star Ronan Keating outed Brian Kennedy in his autobiography a few years ago, the Irish singer-songwriter took the challenge in stride. His latest CD, Brian Kennedy on Song, was inspired by his popular BBC TV Irish Music History series, and he's enthusiastically committed to setting an example for young gays and lesbians, as well as closeted adults around the world. This Way Out correspondent John Frame in Brisbane, who can hardly wait for Kennedy's October tour of Australia, gave the multi-talented countertenor a call.
We have the pleasure of chatting with Brian Kennedy from Ireland. In Tipperary, that's where you're living at the moment?
You're speaking to me in County Tipperary, and I'm looking out over the hills of Clare, and I can see Loch Derg and the trees, and it's a beautiful day.
And you'll be playing here at the Irish Club in Brisbane in October?
Yes. Yes, I'm really looking forward to it.
The good thing for us, for a show like Queer Radio, though, of having Brian Kennedy in town, is that
Yes. You're
not only an artist of repute, who's got a number of CDs out that have done extremely well on the Irish top 30.
Yeah,
but you're also
indeed a
man who's comfortable about his sexuality.
Absolutely, definitely. I mean, thankfully, hopefully that's one of the things that's changed about Ireland, you know, with a certain, a greater confidence about you know, our place in the world and so on. There's also now a greater confidence about different kinds of Irish people and what that means. Because when you think about the word Irish, it used to only really mean one thing. Now, thankfully, there are more and more people coming out. There are more and more discussions about queer Ireland. And, you know, it kind of wasn't lost on me that although my sexuality is actually very private to me, I also realised because I had a certain kind of public awareness is that I had a kind of a responsibility to not shy away from it and to talk about it, because even right now there'll be somebody listening to us who's too terrified to admit what they are and who they are. And maybe if there's somebody like me who already has a career, already has an association with an audience, and maybe the parent even of that child is a fan of mine and they have no idea about my private life, and then it becomes clear, obviously, that, you know, I have a whole kind of gay history and so on, is that, you know, that it's kind of normalized even before the conversation starts. And if all I ever do, John, is start a conversation in a relaxed way in a household about the notion of a child being gay or not, then I think we've succeeded. And because really, you know, in Ireland, heterosexuality is almost in the dark ages too, you know, so any other kind is kind of, you know, it's very tricky. But like I say, although I'm interested in my privacy and my private life and everything, I also see there's a responsibility to say, yes, absolutely, I love men, I love women too, but, you know, I fall in love with men, and that's just who I am.
It's a good distinction to make, because I think that it's actually quite easy for a large number of men to have sex with other men, but it's another matter altogether to be emotionally involved.
I think that's the difference right there, you know, and almost you can almost stretch that as far as one of the difference between men and women also, you know, in the sense that certainly straight or gay, the men that I know, if they're honest, would like to be a lot more sexually active than they are. But it's, you know, as Oscar Wilde said, it's dull morality at the end of the day that stops most people from behaving how they want to. Now, I'm not obviously suggesting that we all go out and just continue to have orgies 24 hours a day, but certainly our sex drives and our sexual interests are usually much, much higher than we allow ourselves.
Yeah. Well, you had your first 18 years in a fairly tough part of Ireland too, in Belfast.
Yeah, I grew up on the Falls Road in Belfast, and hopefully some of your listeners may know about that. And sadly, one of the reasons they will is because it was such a war-torn, violent place with a great deal of sadness and, you know, an atrocity. But, I mean, it's beginning to become a different place these days. But certainly you can imagine, I'm sure you can, because, I mean, everybody's journey to themselves is very different, you know, but equally probably as, you know, as difficult. I mean, pain is relative, you know. So for me, growing up and realizing early on that, you know, I fancied someone of my same sex, it was very difficult, because the only, you know, the only other examples of same-sex relationship that we had were in abusive contexts. They were never, you know, oh, that's Paddy and Johnny and they've lived at the top of the road for 50 years. You know, it was always some, you know, sexually abusing priest or some dirty old man that was a threat to younger people. And there was never any positive, let's say that, there weren't role models, you know, there weren't any at all. And to think possibly one of the things that I am in this day and age in that part of Ireland is a positive role model for other gay people is just overwhelming, really.
Mm-hmm. You were back in Ireland after living for a little while in New York, but you were back there in 2000 when a documentary aired on RTE in August on the 15th in 2000 called The Love That Dare Not Speak Its Name. And that was groundbreaking because it told the Irish people for the first time in public that there are other people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual.
I'm telling you, it's like I was saying earlier, I did a program only two nights ago on Network 2 over here, and still you get that king thing where the presenter's kind of nervously saying to me, so Brian, you're actually, you know, you're out now, you're openly gay, and you can see the kind of nervousness still, and this is a young man that's speaking to me, and I'm like, well, yes, of course, I mean, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't know now, but it is amazing that in 2003 that a program like The Love That Dare Not Speak Its Name is groundbreaking, because for goodness sake, I mean, you know, homosexuality in all its forms has been around for the longest time, you know, but like I say, heterosexuality is almost still in the dark ages. People are still not they haven't copped on about, you know, sex before marriage and all sorts of other, you know, contentious issues that in a country like Ireland, although we appear to be much more sophisticated and wealthier and, you know, we're exporting all sorts of things. I think one of the ways in which you can tell we've really changed is that, you know, that something like Riverdance happened, where we really introduce a sexuality into such a kind of an, you know, an old-fashioned, quite a straight art form.
So how do people then respond to you in live performance? You tend to do intimate shows. Do you have young people coming up to you after a show and saying that they're aware, perhaps, of your sexuality? They've just seen your show.
Yeah. I mean, what started to happen more recently, let's say in the last 5 years, when I've become more and more publicly out, let's say, just by my own behaviour, by my conversations, by the things I write about, that what happens is there's like a lovely, there'll be lots of, thankfully, lots of people queuing to, you know, get CDs signed and so on. But then, you know, you just, you know, we know each other, us gay people, you know what I mean? Mm. There's a different temperature that happens between us and that kind of thing, I think. And certainly I'll see, you know, two good-looking young men who are together, and I'll say, who's the CD for? And he goes, just put, you know, Mark or something. I'm like, okay, and shall I put your boyfriend? And I know that that's me taking a big leap, but I'm thinking, look, this is totally normal. This is absolutely normal. I would say that. If a woman was standing there with her husband, I'd say, will I put your husband down as well, or will I put your wife down? And so it's lovely, because now, instead of absolute mortification and embarrassment, you can see that the both men are absolutely delighted. And they say, yes, yes, do put it down. This is our third date, or this is our anniversary even, and actually we got together with one of your albums. And there's nothing more touching than that.
What they say is a lie, and I cannot swim over, nor have I the wings to fly, but I wish I could find a handsome boatman to ferry.
Ireland's Brian Kennedy spoke with John Frame in Brisbane. For information online about the music you heard from Brian Kennedy on Song, go to www.curb.com. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Dean Elzinga, Fensberry, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and John Frame contributed program material, and you heard Tim Richardson and Jay McLaren from the This Way Out archives. Holly Neer sang Fight Back, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air, or for audio cassette subscription information, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Look for the This Way Out auction area at alternabid.com. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KPFT Houston, Texas, Aero FM Masterton, New Zealand, WYEP Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.